This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Steve, 3 points, clean sheet, all those are very important, but what do you take from tonight's game?
Well, I don't know what I'm doing, maybe.
Well, it stops certain individuals and nonsense with a local newspaper, what doesn't do any favours whatsoever. It's all negativity and nonsense what they write, so we can improve and get better, and regardless of the nonsense what the local stuff does, then we can get on with our jobs.
Oh, behave. Yeah. Yeah, baby!
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Grealish sent tumbling. Lorahan take this one up. There are quite a few options open to him. Including that! Villa and the Death have tied it up!
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myomansaid.com, and joining me for the weekly Aston Villa therapy session is Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground and Chris Budd. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello, we're back for more. Make sure
we're
you
back.
Subscribe.
We're back. Subscribe for more, because now we're really rocking and rolling.
It's like group therapy. We need to be in this together.
Yeah.
It'd be like is it AA where you get a coin after so many years of struggling together the same way as 1 year, two years, 5 years.
We were wondering whether we were going to have a podcast after Steve Bruce won his first two games, but he didn't fool us with those two wins.
And now we've got content.
We knew what was coming. Oh dear, we're laughing on the outside, but inside it's tears yet again. So to recap, we've had the disaster of the Burton Cup exit, backed up literally days later by the disgrace of the Sheffield United performance. Then, after the international break, Hourihan saved Bruce big time, because 3 defeats, and then the axe would have been sharpened with a great injury time free kick. And the Rotherham game, which I always expected to win, and that, I think that fixture fell nicely for Bruce to take the pressure off, obviously slipped us out of DEFCON 1 status. It's probably DEFCON 2 status we were in. But the truth of the matter is, a lot of people who were sticking with Bruce have now turned. It's kind of flicked a switch in me, because you just start to see, it's almost like deja vu, what's happening. I mean, what's your take?
It's a lot of the same mistakes followed up with the same excuses over and over again, and a lot of the same regurgitated comments in the press. And I think it's that key moment that you always get when a manager loses the away support, then you know they're really under pressure.
There was a little bit of singing his name against Rotherham, but I think you'd have found if we got beat by Rotherham, there would have been. I think they would have turned.
Yeah, I think there was almost a little bit of inevitability that in the back of everyone's minds, the whole crowd were almost waiting for Villa to go a goal behind to see what the reaction would be. Luckily, obviously, you know, we got the goal.
And when fans start fighting in the stands, it's normally the sign that all is not good. But Bruce is now fighting back. I mean, but this is what he's tended to do. After any good result, he'll kind of lash out in the press, which I don't know if that helps him or, you know, just boils up the situation, because now he's labelled some fans the Mad Few, which I quite like. I think I might join the Mad Few. He's also said that intelligent fans will know what's happening and will know the score. And, you know, he even slagged off the local press. What's your kind of reaction to that?
If you turn it round and you come out of it and you're in that position to say, I told you so, I knew the team would come good, I think he comes out of it in something resembling a stronger position. But I think when it's the same mistakes over and over again and then the same excuses in the press, it kind of just becomes a bit tedious. And I think actually with the fans getting on his back, a lot of it is just them losing patience with the sort of the cycle that we've gone through for the last couple of seasons.
Yeah. We will center this show around the debate of Bruce out, and you know, whether he should go, when is the good time, how long has he got left to prove himself, and why this time it's more of a reality that something needs to happen rather than last season. First of all, just quickly, 3 points just to kick off the show. If you were overseas or using vicarious methods like VPN and watching the Sheffield United Aston Villa game via AVTV, fans have requested their money back for their AVTV subscription because it actually worked for the Sheffield United game, meaning a global audience was subjected to what can only be best described as a festering turd of reality TV. Is that, that's how you
or
described it,
a footballing
Chris.
Masterclass, depending upon which side of the fence you are. I mean, I'm a my Luke endorsed Sheffield United shirt arrived this morning, so.
I mean, the context of this is the previous games. One of the games, I think it was after like 15 minutes. I think it was a Wigan game where the big no signal sign came up. They lost the pitch. Then they lost the sound, and it was a bit of a farce. And then the next game, was it the Ipswich game where there was a syncing problem, where the commentary was coming up to like 10 seconds before the action, which is just basically a farce.
It's a bit basic, isn't it, really?
So if you want the My Old Man Said recommended course of action, that's to ask for a refund every time it doesn't deliver. You are buying a service that you expect to work. If there's a syncing problem of like around 10 seconds, then it's a joke. And you shouldn't have to pay. And they have, from what supporters have been saying, they do refund if you ask.
Or just mute the commentary and do your best Jack Woodward impression.
Oh, no.
No, no.
Oh, no, 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 no.
No, no. You want to give yourself a refund if you had to listen to yourself doing a Jack Woodward impression.
He used to make victories feel like defeats if I listened to him.
He kept running out of superlatives, didn't he?
That's very true.
As he said himself.
I think I mentioned on the show going way, way back when he was at the club. I've only met him once. Anyway, wow. I had a chat with him and he said, oh, because we did a thing where I think it was on the European Championships where I would throw him one of the country names that are involved. I think it was every day we did this. And he would have to give me a Villa anecdote related to that country, that team, that national team. And he actually was very funny and very good. And actually got an article out of it because it was quite witty. And I thought, wow, this is a bit more witty and insightful than kind of anything he's done for AVTV. Anyway, he said, yeah, My Old Man Said. He said, it's a good name. He says, where does that come from? And I thought,
Never mind, Jack.
Never mind. Anyway, moving on. Point number two, a more serious note to this one. The FA have come out and backed the principle and concept of safe standing, so that's another box ticked in terms of the government being persuaded to endorse it and actually finally get it moving forward. Point three, second season has started. Alan Stubbs, for one, has been booted after 3 months at St Mirren. Michael Collins of Bradford has gone. He's actually, I didn't realise that he's only 32 years old, making him the youngest manager in English football, which leads us to the question, who's next in line for sacking season? I mean, do you think it's a bit early, or we're not discussing it in a Villa context just yet, but just generally.
Oh, I think it's. I think Steve McLaren's probably due his latest sacking, isn't he?
I think if you have a manager who's been there, obviously, a season or two, then you've obviously there's a bit of context there. But for somebody like Alan Stubbs, who has only been there 3 months with St Mirren, what's he meant to do with St Mirren? Win the Scottish Premier League? I mean, that can't happen unless he's managing Celtic or maybe Rangers one day. I think Michael Collins was only in the job also for Bradford this season as well. So. The knives are already out, which leads us on to the main topic of the show. But first of all, I just want to give a quick shout out to Connor Casey, Greg Jones, Steve James and Emma Walford, who have signed up to support the website and podcast as My Old Man Said patrons. If you want to support independent Aston Villa content that actually has quality and is aimed at informing you and getting some opinions across, please do support us. And obviously, it also helps the podcast show, which takes a bit of time to put together, especially the editing. Go to myomansaid.com and click on the Patreon option in the menu bar. Thank you very much. So let's go back to the last show. One of the questions I posed to you guys was, after a decent enough start, well, it was unbeaten, and even though we didn't beat Reading, we managed to go up a place into fourth. And I said, realistically speaking, if we are serious this season about automatic promotion, and considering the kind of softish start to the fixture list, we should remain in the top six going forward. I think, Chris, you agreed with that. And then obviously, a few days later, the next league fixture after the show, Villa actually got hammered.
Convincingly.
And we're 4-0 down, barely 50 minutes gone.
It could have been 5, but for a linesman's flag.
Yeah, it was a good goal, actually. Yeah. Pretty good. Pretty
and the slick. Post could have been 6.
Yeah, a couple of saves here and there, but then again, he did potentially at fault for 2 of those goals, 1 for definite. We're going to centralise this show around Bruce out. So last season, pretty much the same thing happened. We had 1 win in 7. And Twitter got the pitchforks out and started marching to the beat of the Bruce out drum. On this show, we just, we looked at the situation and thought, well, this is Bruce's first pre-season. Hasn't, seen some of his players play yet together. He doesn't know his first 11. He had some, big time injuries. So he thought, you got to give him, he knows these players the best. He's bought it. In January, January 2017, brought in 6 players, which were meant to be the bedrock of the future Villa. So it's like, give him time and see what happens. And it was kind of a validated opinion because they were second in the table after beating the Blues, exactly where they needed to be. But then you can only describe it as disappointing because, we finished behind Cardiff City, whose team is not as good as Villa on paper. I mean, it performed better on grass. So Bruce got outdone by Warnock, and people say we're 90 minutes away from promotion. Well, it doesn't matter if you're 90 minutes away or if you finish 15th or 20th. It's all the same end result. You don't get promoted, and that is what Bruce should be judged on at the end of the day. So, Dan, what's different this time? Because, you said in the last podcast you're still on the fence. Obviously, since then, we've had another debacle in the Cup. And it was the same as what happened to us against Peterborough in the FA Cup. And then, what happened at Sheffield United was, I think that was even more shocking than Cardiff away last season when early part of the season, well, in opening games, we got beat 3-0. Mm. What's different, do you think, this time, if anything?
I think what's different this time is, I'll frame it that you mentioned that this is a Bruce out podcast. I don't necessarily want it to be a Bruce out podcast from my point of view, because
it's not a Bruce out podcast, it's just a discussion of the Bruce out pitchforks that have just come up recently.
What I don't want to do is I did say I was on the fence last time, and I mentioned in a post that I put up that the barometers, it is shifting for me towards that Bruce out, and it's for Bruce to bring it back now, because the things that were concerning, just taking the Sheffield United game as an example, were we were technically far behind a team who I would say were significantly less resourced than us. I think that their manager is very humble, and we'll talk about the kind of things they do well that are quite simple that I think that we as a football club should be doing regardless of who that first 11 is now, because you look across our squad and we've got more than enough. I'm really concerned whether you look at the Burton game and both the Sheffield United game, I'm not convinced all those players are playing for him now. That's a major concern. And defensively, it's a major area where I believe that Bruce is perhaps showing a bizarre stubbornness, because the defensive setup doesn't make any sense to me. We've all watched a lot of football, and you can see what he's trying to create in terms of an attacking setup and how that might come together in the next few weeks. I don't have the first clue how he expects to defend and to keep teams out over 90 minutes with his approach defensively. I think what it's doing is it's damaging Chester. Our fullbacks are all over the place, and it's also, we've got a decent defensive midfielder in Jedinak who looks lost, and when you anchor him with a Whelan, who didn't play too badly against Sheffield United, didn't play too badly against, I'm thinking back a couple of games to Brentford.
It
doesn't make any sense what we're trying to do, and that's where the alarm bells start ringing me for Bruce, when managers start doing things you think that's not logical.
Well, I still think, and it's interesting to me, that Aston Villa, a team, as Tammy Abraham said, should be like a Manchester City, Chelsea in this division and kind of dish it out a bit.
Mm.
Under Bruce, are pretty fixed on about playing a defensive midfielder as if it's, you know, sacrosanct, which suggests we've got some of the players we've got, we should be dictating games. And I would have thought that just a regular centre midfielder who was a bit higher up the pitch would help support our attack more. Let's say build a bridge more, because Grealish would be allowed to play a bit further and build more of a bridge to our lone striker.
But that's another trait that, and this extends beyond just the Sheffield United defeat, that where we've talked about this before, where we have players who've got great individual talent. Codger's a the perfect example of this, actually, where if you've got that player, you have to play to their strengths. Another example is Hogan, is a player who does particular things very, very well, and we haven't looked to replicate
like
how he scored all of his goals at Brentford at all, you know. And that's the frustration, that you look at how we're set up and you think about Bruce particularly at this juncture, where he almost is he stubbornly persevering with a way of playing because he's saying, well, I've gone down this road and this is the way we're going to go, so I'll look pretty stupid, or is he going to arrive to say, I'm going to have to really go back to basics here, or we could be really in trouble. And it's a perplexing situation to arrive at, considering we've only lost one game in the league, but it was such a bad defeat and the manner of it. And
I was just going to bring Chris in if he's still there.
I am still here.
Oh, good. Just checking. Just going back to the point about the defence. Just from my point of view, I mean, I'm patient with these things, because at the end of the day, the only time a manager goes is, you just give him enough rope and, eventually they go. But in this, I got angry against Burton, because this is, we get sold this every time in these cup games, where they're just treating them as pre-season games almost, and they don't give a toss if they're in and out. We've already had a discussion, some of our best memories as Villa fans in recent decades of cup games. Anyway, parking that was the first factor that got me pissed off. Then obviously the capitulation against Sheffield United, and then after the loan transfer window closes, you realise you only have one out-and-out centre-back in the whole squad. And normally the rule of thumb is you have four. What was your feeling about the defensive situation at the moment? And as Dan says, this kind of stubbornness by Bruce to like play Jedinak?
I think his general demeanour is one of a man who's just very fatigued. It's a tired person, he just seems like he just needs a break from football, let alone from Villa. He's in that mindset where you think he's not quite switched on and he's making poor decisions. You think about someone like a Pep or even Mourinho when he's on form, you think these are guys who've got complete clarity of thought. They have a plan, they stick to it, and they sort of dial it into their team so it gets executed properly. I kind of get the feeling that maybe he doesn't necessarily know his best team. He doesn't know how he wants to set it up yet. And that translates to the players. I mean, if as you said, Burton was going to be treated as a pre-season game, I actually thought the Burton game was a perfect one to rest the front five or six. But I'd have actually risked Chester in that game to say, well, this is my back four and that's my goalie, and I need to get as much game time in them, in the tank as I can. You know, I don't need to give Grealish or McGinn game time. You know, they were injured anyway.
Yeah,
I mean, to come out after Sheffield United and say, well, actually, I had five players who hadn't trained all week, you kind of think, well, you've got a big squad here. If they're not fit, you don't have to play them. He can use the well, we've got injuries line when you get hammered, which is a far easier sort of get out of jail card to listen to than the galling nonsense of him talking about, oh, I think I got it wrong again. You think, well, you're admitting you're getting it wrong a lot already, and it's still only August at the time.
In terms of you've got this potential shortage. It is obviously, as we know now, a shortage of centre backs. So you've got Axel Tuanzebe, who you tried there against Yeovil, and obviously it was a bit of an adjustment period. But what you did learn from that game, that he's got that athleticness and speed to recover very well. So if he does make a mistake, he's very swift at making amends for it, which is something that's not in Jedinak's locker anymore. So he lines up against Burton, and I was expecting he's going to get another game at centre-back, because then suddenly you've got a real option and you've got a guy who's actually had a couple of games there, and you're putting him on the path to developing into a centre-back for Villa this season, and he's playing him at defensive midfield.
Yeah, didn't he say he wanted to have a look at him in midfield? And you think, for God's sake, you've got three international midfielders who all do that, who can all do that job pretty well at this level. You've brought a kid in who wants to play centre back. It's kind of, you just think, what is the point of that decision? If you're using that game as a chance to experiment, it's a really poor waste of an experiment, because he hasn't learned anything from that game.
There was no logic to it. As you say, three internationals who, Bjarnason and Whelan, are obviously, I don't think they're 100% happy because they're not playing week in, week out. So why don't we piss them off even more and give them another player to think about? I mean, Whelan could have played that game, no problem.
And in fact, if you're playing Tuanzebe in that team, he's got to be in that team on merit. Now, he isn't going to play centre midfield on merit. Really, he shouldn't be playing at right back on merit either, because you think about all the players we've got who can play there, if you include Hutton, Bree, Elmo, and insert a number of other players who can play in that position probably, they are all superior in that position.
Yeah.
So you think, well, if you're bringing him in as a centre-back, surely, actually, he's the logical person to play centre-back and not anywhere else.
So then after the international break, I think obviously Bruce has meditated on this, and I don't know if it's through kind of external pressure, but then he finally tried Tuanzebe at centre-back against Blackburn. A bit of a shaky start initially, but you kind of expect players to have a few games to bed in. But then you're expecting Tuanzebe to be playing against Rotherham, and Jedinak's back there, and also Taylor's benched again, and Hutton slips back at left back, and then suddenly we've got this unbalanced back four, which, I mean, against Rotherham, I don't think we were going to be in as much trouble as if we played a better team. But still, when we were 1-0 up and in the second half, Rotherham hit the side netting, and that was inches wide.
Yeah, I think.
Why do you think he played him at centre back and then suddenly switched? Was it just to rest him, or what do you think?
I think in regard to the Blackburn game, we discussed previously a couple of times that where he would end up playing would have probably been driven by further up the pitch. So I think Bruce now knows he's got his wingers to play further forward, meaning obviously Elmo can pull back to right back where he'd prefer to play. So all of a sudden we're more balanced in that position. I think he knows that Tuanzebe is a centre back by trade. He's probably just been trying to sort of work him into the team to get him the game time, perhaps. In his defence for the Rotherham game, actually, I think the Jedinak decision was probably purely tactical.
Yeah.
That they were just launching it all game. And actually, Jedinak put in a really good shift. I think, against a more nimble, speedy attack, Jedinak's probably not going to be the option. But there are certain games when he comes into his own, as we've alluded to before from games last season. The Rotherham game was probably the right kind of game for him.
But do you think, in the context of Bruce, seems to think about the opponents more so than he does about getting Aston Villa right? He's always tweaking and twiddling in terms of who he's playing. But when you look at that Villa squad, if he gets it right, it doesn't matter how other teams play. We should be getting rid of them.
Yeah, I've always been very much on the side of just look after yourself, And I think if you look at, as you said, you look at our squad, and if and when it clicks, which I'm still confident it will going forward, I'm not going to be arrogant as to say we'll blow teams away, but we're going to win a lot more games than we'll lose. And it's kind of having that, almost the positive side of arrogance that you see that these sides like Manchester City and Barca have. They go on the pitch expecting to win. Thinking about, the opposition are going to do this or this or this. He almost takes their game plan and says, well, fuck it, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to dictate the game. rather than sort of, it's almost about that, it's the balance, isn't it, between being reactive and being proactive.
And it takes me back to my earlier point about, do we really need a defensive midfielder in against Burton, who, let's say, not our first team, you know, walk through 4-0 in pre-season, and obviously they're in a league below, and then suddenly you see, oh, Villa are playing a defensive midfielder. You know, suddenly it's swing the onus to them.
Yeah, as we said, if you're going to play a defensive midfielder, you've got your choice of three that you're meant to be rotating.
Yeah.
You don't need to bring a fourth one in. You know, you've got Bjarnason, who wants game time, Whelan, who wants game time.
You've also got, going back to the defensive one centre-back situation, you know, Colin Calderwood, assistant manager, also a centre-back. Steve Bruce, a centre-back in his day. So how can we arrive at this situation? Now we have, you know, rumours of Bruce on his knees to John Terry, trying to bring him back into the fold, which, I mean, you know, this is a guy, he's 37, 38 in December. We should be building a team to get automatic promotion that has a little bit of momentum, that you had a couple of, you know, you had, let's say, three or four bits of quality in the Premier League to kind of carry on. Not doing the short-termism again where, you know, you're just trying to get players into, I mean, it failed last time and Terry was a year fresher then.
I think as well, it's quite baffling that, you know, he's known about the position, you know, the season start, well, you know, the transfer window shut quite a while ago.
Yeah.
So he knows he's had a long time to loan someone in. And also, we know, you know, he knew in the summer, as soon as the owners arrived, he knew back then. Because, I mean, we saw them against West Ham and I saw them against Warsaw. The back four looked pony all through pre-season.
Yeah.
So he knew it was an area that needed strengthening, and yet he didn't spend any money when he clearly has a budget, and he didn't manage to loan anybody in.
I mean, they tried to get Harold McCarty from, you know, Le Havre in France, but he's like 20 years old. Is he ready to start? And then...
He's in the same boat as Twanzabi, isn't he? He's a great athlete, but he needs games.
But I thought the interesting thing about the centre half attempts on, especially at the end of the loan window, was that there was a desperate, underreported late bid for Scott McKenna at Aberdeen as well that came very, very late, and he was pursued throughout the window tentatively by Villa, according to people I talked to, and sort of it was left there because I think Villa thought they would either hold on to what they've got, or they would sign the kid from Le Havre you just mentioned. It didn't come off because he went, well, do you know what? I'll stay in France, and then we presumably had already said to Elphick, you can go, we honoured that, and that's left us. Chronically short. I think what it's done, it's left us absolutely no cover, because I think if you guys have just been talking about what the options that we've got, I think if we use the logical options, Tuanzebe's, you know, he's been groomed by Man United to be a centre half. I think.
And he's a ball playing centre half.
Yeah. So it's illogical to me that if you haven't, you know, sign that natural replacement or what you want to do there, that you use him for what is intended. So, or you don't let Elphick go, irrelevant of what you think about him, you can't let him go.
They go in for Scott McKenna late, and, you know, as if the Don's boss, Derek McKenzie, is going to say, oh, yeah, take our main centre-back. You know, he's on record saying that McKenna's too good for the Championship, and they waved away Swansea and Hull earlier in the summer.
Mm.
And I think Villa waved the cash at them and probably doubled what those two were willing to offer from, because I think they were initially going for around the 3 million mark and Villa were looking more at the 6-7. And I think Aberdeen would have done the deal if it was earlier on in the window, because they had, you know, their boss had no chance to get any replacements in, you know, it's literally in the last hours. And, you know, he's obviously not as dumb as Bruce is, letting Elphick go with actually no deal done for a replacement. And going back to Elphick, last season I was saying just play him when Terry's out, just play him, because at the end of the day, this is a guy who captained at centre-back Bournemouth to the Championship title. Now, he can't be that bad, and, you know, just for the record, Bruce has never won the Championship, but, you know, Tommy Elphick has.
By all accounts, Elphick's, you know, really good around the changing room. He's a good professional. Bruce has said a number of times, oh, you know, I feel sorry for him. He's done nothing wrong. And you kind of think, well, this is this is your chance to give him the opportunity he probably deserves. You know, if then he has a 5 or 6 game run and doesn't come good, fair enough, then you bring someone in. But to not give him a run of games is, again, it's baffling.
To me, it just seemed like a logical, safe option. It's like it might, you know, you might need to upgrade him in January or you know, whenever, but in the here and now, I mean, sorry, but if I was, you know, if you're a gambling man, give him and Chester a few games, and they've already played together last season. And even then, he wasn't trusted by Bruce. It's Bruce's, let's say, behaviour with Elphick is a little bit similar to Albert Adoma, who he was trying to get rid of at the start of last season. And then if reports are to believe, you know, Adoma was up in Middlesbrough, and that only didn't go through because they couldn't agree on terms.
I mean, I don't know if you saw the little piece on Twitter with Adoma's brother.
Yeah.
Having a meltdown at Bruce as well, and a lot of Villa fans jumped in on that. You know, I think Adoma has definitely faded in the last few months, but I don't think there certainly isn't a large quantity of the Villa fan base that dislike Adoma. I think he's actually quite a liked person.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people
who,
when he plays, everyone kind of, they want him to do well. They accept that he's not on top form at the moment, but I don't think there's anybody who'd be kind of kicking him out the door.
I think the other bit about those two players is, especially, I mean, Grantham and Huller in transition, you know, those are two players, and you think of Adoma too, who he'd be going to a direct rival. I don't understand what...
Yeah, why would you
know,
strengthen
what we
your
stand
rivals?
To gain by shipping players out like that either. You know, we weaken ourselves and we're handing our rivals, you know, our backup players.
Well, you're handing them your top goal scorer from last season.
I was just about to say, let's not forget that he covered Bruce's ass in terms of all the strikers that are out injured or not playing to their full potential, shall we say.
Yeah, it could be argued he kept him in the job.
Yeah, and carried us into the playoffs.
I think it's right to frame it in the right way. I mean, my view is that Adoma is the fading talent, and that you know we've obviously brought in a couple of wide players to, I don't know, take the pressure off or to, I don't know, pass him by ultimately. But it doesn't make much sense to me why... You know, if we don't have to sell all of a sudden, you know, based upon, you know, an injection of cash from the new owners and whatnot. And I think that's the only thing about this all that counts in Bruce's favour to a small degree, is that we arrived into the transfer and loan market later than everyone else and in pretty bad shape in respect of time. But it doesn't excuse then some of the bizarre decisions. I keep using the word bizarre. I'm conscious of it, but I don't understand why... Why we'd want to put ourselves at such a disadvantage unnecessarily? Do you know what I mean? If we'd have woken up on the day after the loan deal and lost Adoma, I don't see what we'd have gained other than shifting a bit of money off the wage
bill.
Which
essentially we don't. It doesn't look like we need to do at the moment. You know, we're not.
We don't seem particularly bothered by it, do we?
I think we still obviously need to balance the books in terms of wages for sure. But also you've got like Yannick Bolasie, who, you know, he missed a whole season through an injury. And, you know, he came back at the end of last season for Everton and obviously wasn't fancied because he wasn't even in their you know, 25 or whatever they cut it down to, which is a kind of a clue. The Dutch guy who's never played in England said that, you know, the first excuse if he didn't play well would be, oh, it's going to take him 10 games to, you know, transition and get it up to speed with the English game. If he's doing that and Yannick Bolasie isn't like 100% fit, and you've just got rid of Green and Adoma, what kind of position are you in? And the end game here is promotion.
I think he's got half an eye. If he's bringing Abraham in, you don't go out and bring someone like that in for them to be a bit part player. So I think he knows that he is the main man. Whether Codger or Hogan like it, Abraham is coming in to be his main number nine. So he starts and he plays straight down the middle, whatever. If he's fit, he plays from now on.
Yeah.
So then you think, well... Codger all of a sudden becomes an option on the wing.
No,
actually, he's been a lot more effective. I mean, nobody's going to get a cross out of him because obviously he doesn't want to pass. But I think Bruce doesn't trust Codger. I think he may find himself on the bench.
I don't trust him. Do you, Dan?
Never.
So speaking of Tammy Abraham, we've finally seen him in a couple of games now, and it looks like Bruce is going to be, I think he'll be switching between trying to get Codger there up with him or in some games playing Abraham on his own. Do you think straight away, if we are just talking about playing one up top, that Abraham is a better option than Codger?
I would say so. I think he looks to be better at holding the ball up, and I think he's certainly more likely to put a shift in than Codger, but it would appear he wants to play them both, which I think is probably a good thing for both of them. It's certainly going to help Codger out because he looks like the kind of player, from what I've seen in the two games so far, that he wants to link up with people.
Can you say that again? He looks like a kind of player that wants to link up with people. I think that's the first time anybody said that sentence describing Codger. That kind of two-touch setup for Abraham's goal was like, who is this new player that we've signed alongside Abraham?
Yeah, you were half expecting Codger to shoot. It was a real pleasant surprise to see.
Yeah.
a nicely sort of constructed goal. It wasn't a long ball or a dead ball situation or a cross. It was a really what you'd call a proper football goal.
And it was, you know, he was like playing from instinct. It was, because normally he gets the ball and then he's like, the first thing he's thinking, right, I'm off on a dribble here. But it was without even looking, he kind of put it through.
It was certainly the first time in quite a long time I can think of
his career. His career.
Yeah. Well, I meant in the wider terms of the Villa, that it actually looked like we might have a front two.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, right, even like Benteke used to play generally on his own.
Yeah, no, that's true.
You know, we probably haven't actually had a centre forward partnership in probably since Agbonlahor and Carew.
Agbonlahor, who's that? I told you never to mention him on this podcast again.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Codger obviously is one thing, but when Hogan is back, let's say in a week or two's time, that potentially could be interesting. Abraham and Hogan as a traditional big man and small man routine, because they've got quick brains, and that could finally unlock Hogan into the player that we thought we bought.
Yeah, and I think they're both penalty box players from what I've seen. You know, they both want to get on the end of things, which is only going to help, you know, the likes of Alghazi and Bolasie, Adoma, you know, all the wide guys and this sort of so-called winger based system that Bruce wants to play.
It does have a little bit of deja vu about it, this Villa team coming together, doesn't it? That it, on paper, you can see what we're trying to do.
What are we trying to do?
Well, what I think we're trying to do is we're trying to...
You don't know.
score one more than the opposition without properly thinking about what the impact will be. But what that leaves us is very exposed down the flanks, and in our quest to get two up front, which is... In an ideal world, I can see why we would want to get Abrahams and Codger up front, because I think Codger needs support. He's a greedy bastard, but he needs some support. And we need more to aim at as well. But I do wonder whether it's going to look more like a 4-4-2 or some variation of it. Don't you think that's where our defensive lack of preparation counts so much, though? I think if you were to take last season's defence to a greater or lesser degree and plonk it in there now, And it's, I'm not saying Terry's the answer, but that Terry type figure who's got that broad range of experience, and means that Chester can almost do the hoovering up, if you like, around them rather than being the main focal point of the defence.
I think we sacrificed the DM. I mean, the DM is one of the reasons we play so deep.
I mean, we discussed it before, that the previous sort of games, even when we were winning, you had Grealish taking the ball off the back four.
Yeah.
Now, tactically, that just can't happen, because you need him 30, 40 yards further up the field. You know, if you have a ball playing centre-back, for example, a Twan Zabi, and Chester's okay on the ball, even if you've got Whelan in there who can get around, or Bjarnason, or someone who's a bit more mobile in the middle of the park, you can let the likes of McGinn and Grealish get up top, because they have to play off, you know, off the striker to link up the game. Or you have a Bolasie or Alghazi or whoever it's going to be. And that's one thing I'll give Adoma credit for, was that last season, actually, he was the guy who got into advanced positions.
Yeah.
Either playing off Davis, or he was playing off Hogan. And actually, it was Adoma or Snodgrass that were actually the real goal threat.
And Adoma, he got a lot of his goals drifting in from that left wing, which we're not actually doing now. If Codger's gone out, let's say, down the right wing to get the ball, there's nobody coming into the middle. And that's what Adoma did very well. He basically substituted whoever was meant to be the lone striker by covering him and giving the team a focal point in the box.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just having focal points to when you attack. And at the moment, it's kind of, it's just all disjointed from top to bottom. It's hard to work out which, where it starts. You know, Bruce, when he first came in, of course, said, right, I'm going to build from the back. I'll make a solid. This year, it looks like he's gone the opposite way and has said, well, let's try and almost be gung-ho. Let's get the front five absolutely flying, which, let's be honest, they're not. And we'll almost try and outscore teams, which is very naive.
Let me caveat all this doom and gloom by saying, I thought against Reading and Brentford, the first, let's say, hour or so, Villa were actually all right and looking quite tidy.
I think we
didn't have the threat in the box, and we should have won both games. But they were looking, I mean, at Reading, I was like, especially the first half, I was kind of quite relaxed. I thought, well, we're going to win this 2 or 3. But then as it got on, you just thought, hang on a minute, they're not taking the chances and they're obviously going to tire.
I think, you know, a big one that I've discussed with a couple of people through the whole season so far has been the decision making. There's barely a player in the team that I would actually say is immune from criticism. To say that, you know, even Grealish, McGinn at times, in fact, McGinn on a number of occasions, they've all these guys have got into great positions.
Yeah,
in the attacking third, and either the final ball or the final shot, they've made the wrong decision. You look at the back as well. There's been a lot of poor decisions that have cost us goals, be it from the goalkeeper, Jedinak, obviously, with the back pass against Wigan, umpteen occasions against Sheffield United.
And another thing that has got me mad now is when you looked at the fixture list, you thought this is a chance for, if Bruce is serious about automatic promotion, is to actually get amongst that pack and get established, because in December, that's where it's going to sort itself out. Because we've got to play the three relegated teams from the Premier League, who are obviously, they're not doing too badly. They're no Sunderland, shall we say, of last season. And we've got to play Leeds and Middlesbrough. So there's your Merry Christmas, Villa fans. If we're mincing around, you know, 10th spot or something, come December, we're going to be mid-table, lower half, and we're going to be away. There's no way we can get back into that automatic promotion race.
Unless we were to go on a run like Fulham did last year, where, you know, they went on a run when they beat us. I think didn't they beat all of the top six in about an 8-week period?
Yeah,
I don't see Villa doing that.
Pretty much played them back to back, but they had their shit together. I mean, their poor start was mainly down to, like, you know, not having Tom Caney fit. You know, who obviously,
or a striker,
their captain. They didn't have. They got Mitrovic obviously in the January window to add cutting edge to them, and, you know, they galloped home.
I think that's the thing we need to establish, is we need to. It's a lot of footballing cliches. We need to arrive at a, you know, what is our best 11. I'm not convinced Bruce is settled on a formation, because we saw a completely different formation in pre-season, which I think in part was perhaps fed by the fact that we didn't know what the finances looked like and whether we'd be able to get players in and what we're working with. But then since then, we seem to have gone counter to that sort of intuition, where you're trying to say, well, I'm going to get the best out of what I've got. We should always be applying that philosophy, yeah. I think. And that's where it seems to have gone out the window, that we...
Almost like PR signings to a certain extent. It's like, look who we could get. We got Yannick Bolasie. He was 25 million, you know, season ago. And, you know, John Terry last year, Snodgrass. But it was still, we were relying on these players, you know, let's say individual brilliance, as people have been saying, as opposed to you're looking at that Villa team, you know how they're going to play, you know their kind of style, and you know they're going to set about a team, and you're pretty comfortable they'll beat them. You can't be comfortable playing anybody with this team.
And that's another question. And all these things will always come out in the end, that you wonder whether, with new owners and with a new, you know, in the constraints that they've got in this moment of a transfer window and loan window drawing to a close quickly, two things are at play. That they want to bring something to the squad to say, right, we you know, want to make some statements. And I think holding on to Grealish is as big a statement as any of the signings. But, you know, it wasn't lost on me when I was looking at the new CEO who's come in that, you know, one minute Tammy Abraham isn't going anywhere because he's on the periphery of the Chelsea team. We get the former Chelsea managing director in a CEO, and the guy who's not moving is suddenly holding a Villa shirt up at Bodymore Heath. Yeah. You know, it's how much of that was Bruce influence? I don't know. But it's, these things don't just happen.
I was surprised by that line, because he declared that he wanted to stay and force the issue. Although he wasn't in the squads for the, I think it was the first few Chelsea league games, you know, he came on as a sub in the Charity Shield, so he's not that far away. And Chelsea have got all those Europa League rounds to come, and, you know, League Cup. So he'd get plenty of games at Chelsea. And, you know, the best way to impress the team you play for is to play for them. And he would have. So, yeah, you're right in terms of that suddenly switched. And what seemed to be fairly logical that he would stay turned on its head. And, you know, he seems a bright kid as well. But a lot of what's in terms of Villa behind the scenes, they've obviously been waiting for a CEO to come to town. And we've got somebody who's obviously well-heeled in terms of big clubs with Chelsea and Liverpool. Obviously had a bit of an enlightening experience at Liverpool for a season, shall we say, when obviously ended up in court in the end, fighting against the outgoing owners.
He did win
indeed. Did win. And also, I think he ruffled a few feathers of the Liverpool fans. I mean, it's still a rumour. Maybe it's like an off... I think it's an off-record comment he probably made about the spirit of Shankly, which is one of their, let's say, their most active supporter group. He referred to them as like sons of strikers, strikers as in people who picket. And I don't think that went down well because suddenly on the cop, there was a banner of a 15-foot penis with a red bell end on and with his name up the shaft. So, so that potentially leads you to think, oh no, he could be a potential Tom Fox number two. But as with all these things, you've got to give him the benefit of the doubt going into it.
One thing I'd say with him from what I've read, and it's very limited, is that he seems like a reasonably young, dynamic guy. You know, he's not one of these sort of old farts who's just going to sit in his office. He's going to want to come here and make an impact.
I mean, I've done quite a detailed write-up on him, and there's a lot out there in the public domain on him, but the guy, I mean, Christian Perslow's got some pedigree, and I made the comparison to Tom Fox, that though Fox came with some commercial experience, it wasn't football commercial experience.
Well, it was Arsenal, he was at Arsenal for about 5 years.
Yeah, but it was a shoe-in off the back of off the Puma thing, and I think that what the difference I'd draw between Fox and Perslow would be that he struck genuinely massive commercial deals that have changed the narrative. I mean, take Liverpool. Liverpool were on the cusp of administration, like we were. You know, that's a fact. I mean, a lot of this was kept from the media and kept hush hush at the time, and he became a bit of a hate figure in Liverpool. One, because I think of, as you say, some of the
and he fell out with Rafa as well.
He sacked Rafa, didn't he? Essentially, and you know, the one thing that might make people go ooh is that he replaced him with Roy Hodgson. But it's context, isn't it? That basically they were so broke that they couldn't afford anything else, and he had to get those one wait for those commercial deals to come through, and what that included in time was the biggest shirt sponsorship that's ever been signed for Liverpool in that time. So big that the sponsor had to defend it.
It used to be the biggest. Now it's Luke Roper. That's now the new biggest.
Sorry, Luke. Your fanatics tie up. And the context being that, you know, Liverpool were servicing, I think, a £45 million loan based upon what the old owners had saddled them with. And it's important context. And, you know, people can go and do their own reading and research into that. But then you fast forward a little bit and you look at what he brought to Chelsea. Yeah, I, as a football fan, I don't give a shit about, you know, improving the brand and yada, yada, yada. But where we should be interested is the financial fair play bit, that he significantly increased both those clubs' revenues. And what's that? That's income, and it means you can do a lot more in the transfer market. And as a club, it allows you to, you know, grow and do things. So, you know, the jury's always going to be out on these people. But
indeed, we will. But the good thing is, staff will actually be able to make plans now and actually do things. I mean,
someone running the show. I mean,
yeah, we go to these football supporter consultation group meetings, and it's hard to organise one without a front figure for the club to actually tell you things and act on things. And this has been a bit of a frustration the last few months, but at least now, you know, we can go forward in that respect. Although, you know, most of the things you table at the club, it's you know, we'll be able to do that when we get promotion. So it's all about promotion. It's such a big deal that is the context that Bruce now will be judged on. Can you get us promoted this season? None of this like, oh yeah, well, you know, we've established ourselves now, we're stable. I mean, come on, this is not a league that takes a 5-year plan to get out of. This is a league where Wolves, the bottom half team, suddenly have a new manager. They changed their recruitment policy. We mentioned this last week. Changed their philosophy. Bang, they're up with a manager, his first ever season in the Championship.
Yeah, and similarly with Fulham, you know, Jukanovic came in the year before. Yeah. He knocked them into shape quite quickly. They got to the playoffs playing really good football. They just fell short. The year after, they were one of the favourites to go up. Had a very similar team, added a little bit of quality to it, and they played probably as with Wolves, played comfortably the best football in the division and deservedly
went. And now you're looking at a scenario where Leeds are replicating this, and they've pretty much up the same team as they did last season, just different manager. Changes the style, the kind of ethos of behind the scenes as well. And it's as simple as that. It really is. Bruce, he always tucks up his opponents. He always tucks up this league and he always makes it out to be this the hardest thing when that's just covering up his own deficiencies. As I'm starting to, well, I've always kind of known this, but it's getting confirmed almost week by week nowadays.
Getting found out and outthought by far more inexperienced managers, isn't he? Sometimes you'll get the youthful inexperience of teams, but he's played Dean Smith at Villa, I think the fourth time he'll have played against him, maybe. And he hasn't come out on top. Now, for somebody who's got a hell of a lot more experience, you would have thought he'd have a plan of how to negate the threat.
Yeah,
and still hasn't managed to. And we're not talking about a Brentford side who are light years ahead of Villa in terms of spending power or the quality of their team. This is a Brentford side whose resources are vastly inferior to Villa's.
This is a Brentford side that sold us what, from the outside, looked like their best player, who had scored well into double figures on the day they played us. And without their top man, their main forward, managed to beat us 3-0. I mean, what kind of manager have we got? It's always handy if when you're playing a team to buy their best player on the day that you're playing them. Because that kind of makes it easier to, potentially beat them. Alas, not. So going back to Bruce, who obviously you can tell from my even like common sense David Michael, logical David Michael, he's just left the building now. He's had enough of this, seeing bullshit, avoidable stuff is what I'm talking about. You know, if Villa get beat 4-3 by Sheffield United and it was a good tussle and Sheffield United played really well and Villa had a good go, then, you know, fair enough.
Yeah.
But come on, these are glaring errors that the manager, and he was doing this last season, is just replicating what's happened in the previous season is happening again. He's not learning. He's not changing things. He's apologizing for making glaring mistakes. He says, in hindsight, I should have done this. In hindsight, well, a lot of fans knew this, and we're just laymen. You know, we haven't been in the game, but we can see it a mile off. And you start to think, well, is he under so much pressure now? And, you know, he had a bad year earlier on. Personally, is this, as you said, maybe he needs a break?
I think potentially. And also, I think, as you were saying, regardless of the Sheffield United game, if we'd have had these results that have, you know, transpired, but actually he'd have built a team and everyone could say, oh, okay, do you know what? We can see what they're doing here. When this clicks, this will be brilliant. Because that's what happened with Fulham twice. Yeah. You know, everyone could see, oh, okay, that's the style, that's the plan, that's how they want to play. It's not quite working, but at least you can see that. If Villa had a very clear pattern of play and it was individual errors which happen, you know, you have to vouch for the opposition having a good day as well.
You know, I've got time for that.
Which they will.
I've got patience. Yeah. If you see a team trying something
and it's building, but you don't have any sense of, okay, that's the plan and there's momentum with it. It's still a case of we're just treading water at the moment.
If you just look at the Blues, for example, they haven't won a game this season. But their fans at the moment, correct me if I'm wrong, but they've only lost two because they've been playing well and Monk's got them doing something where they actually can see there's a potential end result here.
Yeah, I think it's actually the opposite of the Villa, isn't it? They have a plan and without the personnel. Yeah. We have infinite resources and no streamlined plan. And that's that's why the Burton fans, the Brentford fans buy into the project that Dean Smith's doing. It's the same reason why the Lincoln fans bought into the project there. It's the same reason why...
Sorry, don't mention Lincoln and Danny Cowley, because I want Lincoln to keep that manager as long as possible for purely selfish reasons.
It's the same reason why a lot of supporters have like Guardiola syndrome. You know, everybody wants their team to play like Man City now, which you can't necessarily do, but you can have your own way of doing it. And I don't see... Still, as we've been talking about for months and in fact years, what is this Villa style? It's just not there.
But for example, if you are going back a few years, and we mentioned their dressing room antics on the last show, Wimbledon, they had a style, and it was effective because they knew what their style was, and they knew what they were going to do, and they knew what their plan was.
Yeah, and I think as well, similarly to City, you know what the Man City plan is. Like when you go and play at the Etihad, you know what's going to you're going to get thrown at you, but you can't stop it. Same as Wimbledon. You knew you were going to come under the aerial bombardment, but it was another thing to stop it.
Yeah.
With Villa, you can shut Villa down very easily, because every team now just targets Jack Grealish, which they've done, unfortunately. Yeah. And I don't necessarily think McGinn, I think he's played well, but I think he's going to need games to really grow and build into consistency, because he's come from what is essentially an average side in a poor league.
Have you just taken his McGinniesta nickname off him? Have you revoked it?
Oh no, that definitely remains.
It's been revoked until he's put three back-to-back performances together. So just to wrap off the Bruce out debate, a couple of things, and sorry if this show has been one-dimensional in terms of talking about it. When would you act in terms of Bruce? What does he A, have to do to get out of it, and B, how long would you let him carry on doing what he's doing now?
My view is, I think he's under pressure.
I think he knows he is, doesn't he? He's very aware of it.
I think he knows it. I think that it's a symptom of, this is going to sound arrogant, but he's at a big football club here with big expectations. My biggest bugbear with Bruce isn't I can park results like yourself. You know, you win and lose games in football. There's freak results, etc., etc. It's when managers do things you think that's an illogical, nonsensical decision that's not helping you, you know. And I think that's what he'll be judged on. He's in a 3-5 game window, yeah. I think, and that's not a good place to be as a football manager. And it can be perplexing for other teams looking in. You know, there was a couple of Sheffield United fans who commented on my blog in some of the comments below and reacting to some of the
block
other comments
them
from Villa fans. And it's a tricky barometer, but there's a perplexion, isn't there, that they go, well, you know, you've actually got it quite good and yada yada yada, but our expectation level is different because we're on a different pathway to a Sheffield United or a Brentford or a, you know, for the, some of the reasons that Chris said. And that's why Bruce finds himself in such a tricky position here, that he's not at a Hull, you know, he's not at a Wigan. He's at an Aston Villa, and that, you know, our peak moment was a European Cup, but actually we were Premier League mainstays for a long, long period of time. And where I have a sympathy with a lot of Villa fans is also around the erosion of quality and this belief that we can't, you know, there is no Aston Villa way. You know, my entire watching life, I've been confused as to what that should be or what that is. But with the amount of investment that we've had and the players that we've brought through, and you would have to think with the two new owners that they'll come together periodically in 3, 4, and 5 game cycles with their advisors, and, you know, their objective, the club's objective as Aston Villa, has to be to be promoted. If you can't get through the next batch of fixtures and have shown significant improvement, I think Bruce would struggle to explain that in the context of the players that he'll have hopefully at his disposal, bar injuries, and some of his own decision making. And I think if Bruce loses the Villa job, it'd be quite easy to say you could have done things differently.
I mean, we discussed last time out, didn't we, that regardless of what goes on over the next few weeks, months, there's a very, very slim chance he's going to be there this time next season.
I would put money on that, yeah.
I cannot see it happening, whether they were to go up, not go up. I just
if
don't
you were in
see
the Premier League, you'd have a very meek, mediocre Premier League manager.
I don't necessarily think the new ownership sees him as being the long term appointment. I think they sort of see it that, okay, you're the man in the hot seat. We'll give you the opportunity that you're semi deserving of our time and respect.
Yeah. Some respect for that.
Yeah, they wouldn't have just come in and booted him out the next day, but they'll say, okay, well, this is where we want to be. You know where this club needs to be. But if you're not fulfilling your remit, you know, don't dog eat dog.
We're also going to have a sticky period in December.
Yeah, December is 4 away games and 2 hard home games.
If he manages to turn the ship around a little bit and win, let's say, the easier fixtures, especially the home ones, then if he hasn't got a team together in sync with any, you know, as we said, way of doing it, whatever that way is, then it's going to be a bit of a struggle, and we'll be back in this situation in December. And I don't think there'll be any patience there, because obviously you want to get a manager in before the January window. But just a question, do you think the new owners and CEO are doing due diligence on potential replacements now?
Yes, I think they would be naive. I think they'd be naive not to. And they probably have been for a while, if you did, but no.
Dan?
I think modern football dictates that they probably were doing that before or as and when they were taking over, because I think that the outlook for Villa at the point at which they were taking over was so bleak that I don't think you could have even discounted someone like Bruce walking away either. It's about what the owners see in terms of immediacy. You know, do they see this season as the season to get up? As fans and supporters, having been through three seasons of at times mediocre Championship football, you know, the first season was a write-off, the second season was a major letdown. For me, we need to get out of this mess before we're down here. Like, you know, Leeds have been down here for what, a decade or more now, and you know, the years can roll by. I would have to assume that, especially an astute businessman like them, that they're looking for top leadership, and that's perhaps an ongoing.
They'll be aware that if they don't get them up this year, you know, you're going to lose all the guys you've brought in on loan again. You're definitely going to lose Chester. You're definitely going to lose Grealish, potentially at a devalued price because of his contract situation. I mean, he may or may not sign a new contract. Who knows? Codger will go for, you know, hugely less than what we paid him. Paid for him.
We paid anything for him.
Well, yeah, good point.
IOU.
Well, it would mean you're going to have another rebuild again. You're constantly in this one-year cycle of rebuild. So if they are writing, if they were saying this season is the year we build, you would surely say, well, actually, we don't see the manager being here next year. You would just get rid and say, right, if we're going to build, you'd be very open to the supporters and say, if we go up this season, brilliant. If we don't, though, we're sure as hell going to be there next year and we'll make sure of it. And I think the majority of supporters would accept that.
I wouldn't. I'm out of here.
If people actually saw a tangible plan being put into place, people would go, okay, do you know what, I could buy into this. But at the moment, it just seems like we're constantly reacting.
Reactive
rather than proactive.
Villa have been reactive really since O'Neill left as a football club.
I would go with that.
Probably the one proactive move you would say was probably when they felt they need to go out and buy Darren Bent a year too late.
One of the big questions is always of any current manager is always who are we going to get in to replace him then? And I don't know, I think this is a debate for another time. Would you agree? Or am I avoiding the question?
I mean, it's probably a debate for another time because, to be honest, I don't really see an out-and-out obvious candidate. There's lots of potentials, but there's no one who jumps off the page straight away. You think, yeah, he'll come in and do the job straight away.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can talk about managers already in employment. And, I mean, we've seen it before, like, you know, Big Ron, who at Sheffield Wednesday says, you know, I'm staying with Sheffield Wednesday. I'll always be here. And then the next day is Villa manager. So you can never buy into that. But, you know, people are talking about Brendan Rodgers. They're talking about Dean Smith. And these are managers in jobs at the moment. I mean, there's a manager that I like who you mentioned him earlier on, but I don't want to see him leave his present club. And I don't know if he's capable of football at this level at the moment, but he's very dynamic in the lower leagues because he instills a culture from roots up, which is something that Villa really need to do and get the fans believing in something. There was an article on the My Old Man Said website which discussed a couple of people and then dropped in the writer's favourite at the moment, Oscar Garcia, who comes with a lot of credentials in terms of obviously working under Cruyff and Bobby Robson and Mourinho, and Pep Guardiola likes him, and he's somebody who does that kind of root and branch, creates a kind of culture and a way of playing, but he seems a bit temperamental because he jumps from one job to the other. You know, he's been in the Greek league, the Israeli league, and he was obviously at Brighton for one season and resigned after they failed in the playoffs, which I always remember at the time. I mean, he did amazingly on poor resources. I think they were like the 13th best off in terms of resources, whether that's calculated by the wage bill or whatever, and managed to get them in the playoff. If I remember rightly, at that time, they were playing great football. They just didn't have a proper striker to finish the job off. And I think I saw him a couple of times with him as manager. And he, you know, had a good way of playing, and it's definitely a way of playing that could get us out of this league. But, you know, it's questions about his temperament and would he be here for the long haul?
I was going to say, I think Mr. Mourinho is probably going to be available soon, isn't he?
I don't know, they started winning again. Same with the Arsenal manager.
I mean, there's a lot of talk of Dean Smith, isn't there, which is a big risk. And would he leave what he's building at Brentford? As much as he's a Villa fan, probably knows he's similarly to someone like Eddie Howe at Bournemouth. You know, he probably knows he's not going to get sacked unless he does something wrong.
I think Dean Smith, there's a lot of talk this season in particular that they've got a team that could potentially, let's say they're aiming for the playoffs this season. So if they peter out and end up 8th or 9th, I mean, probably he'll lose his kudos, obviously, and cachet, but he'll be looking a bit more long-term after that, because what's he going to do? He's going to end up as one of these championship managers that just stay there and have a little bit of respect, and you know, maybe once in their life will have a season in the Premier League. But this,
I mean, one thing I would say with Dean Smith is he's somebody who, if you brought him into Villa now, you know he'd have a style of football that the fans would buy into. Secondly, I think the fans would buy into him as a personality, because obviously he's a local guy, he's a supporter of the club. He'd kind of almost have that slight John Gregory factor about him. The fans would kind of really buy into his personality, I think. But would he be, I'm not going to say out of his depth, but I still think, as much as from a football point of view, it necessarily isn't as big, from the size of the club and the resources and the expectation, it'd be a huge step up for him.
But, you know, it's like throwing people in the deep end. You don't know if they can swim unless you actually try it. But one thing I will say, I think he has the players at Villa currently that potentially could suit the way he'd want to set up, more so than they're being utilised now.
I'd say so. If you think someone like Grealish in that, you put Grealish in that Brentford team, they'd be devastating.
Well, potentially. He's not that good, by the way, Chris Grealish. Right, anyway, you think about these things, it's a little bit disrespectful to speak ill of the dead until they're actually dead. Is that how the saying goes? Probably not. Something like that. So we'll get across that bridge when there's a serious threat of him getting booted. Because at the moment, fixtures looking okay-ish. If you put your money on him leaving, when do you think he'd go? I think December would be the... If he can get through December, he'd be doing pretty well.
I think if he has got through December, you'd say it's probably because the team are firing. Because I think that a lot of the supporters are getting to the point now where it doesn't really matter what he does at this point. They just want rid.
I think the barometer of that's going to be whether the club feels like it's going to be promoted.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
We don't have any momentum at the moment. And I think back to last season where we absolutely battered Wolves at Villa Park, and you know, that felt like the moment to me where we would go on and steamroll it and get promoted. December, you know, coming through this next period into December, that's going to be the barometer, isn't it, really? That are we ambling along like we were the first season where we had, you know, no realistic prospect of making the playoffs, but trying to delude ourselves we would. And like last season, you know, this bizarre faltering away towards the end, I think we'll know quite quickly what will happen.
Because last season, after beating the Blues, which was, let's say, a promising performance, because we dictated that game from beginning to end in a way that we hadn't really the rest of the season, certainly in the part of the season leading up to that game. And then that catapulted us for the first time and only time for something like 6 days in that top two. Mm. And that's when I thought, right, and you know, as fans leaving Villa Park that day, was they were thinking, right, we're up and running now, it's, you know, let's get this on. And straight away we started to fade, and then as you said, that Wolves game, we thought, right, this is the last hurrah, and then that just folded in on itself within a week. But yeah, I think as you say, we'll know pretty quickly, and then if he gets through December, that will, when you boil it down, mean that Villa are actually playing well and beating teams in the mix. I think when I said at the top of the show and last show about their needing to stay in the top six, if they win the next couple of games, I think they'll be back in the top six, and they'll have to stay there through December for him to stick around. Right, any closing thoughts as we wrap up this podcast? I think we've covered everything. We're full of excitement for the rest of this season. We're going to win the FA Cup and come second to Brentford. Dean Smith will march his Brentford team into the Premier League and just laugh at suggestions that he should be the Villa boss.
No. Dean Smith will be our manager. He'll be our manager by then. Bruce will be managing Brentford.
You really are Bruce in. If we've learned anything from this show, Dan Rogers is Bruce in. You will find his Twitter address on the program notes if you want to leave him your best regards there. Sorry, this podcast does not have an agenda. It's completely open to suggestions. Bruce in, Bruce out. Is there any other? This is a bit binary. Is there any other options? Anyway, on that note, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My old man said,
away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.